Hope you're enjoying Tech Ed. Yes? Brilliant. It's fantastic to be here. My name is Martin Sykes, and for the next hour, you are my victims. I am going to help you understand how to communicate. Communicate with people who perhaps just don't care or give a damn about any of that technology stuff that you are passionate about. I'm going to wander around a little bit, try and talk to in different parts of the room, because this is the second worst room I've ever had the pleasure of presenting in. I know there's somebody all the way down there and somebody all the way down there and hardly anybody in the rows. But the worst session I've ever done was a room similar to this, where halfway through the session, the window cleaners came down behind us. So it can get worse. I work for Microsoft. I'm going to explain a little bit more about what I do in Microsoft in a minute, but I want to start with a little story. A long time ago, when I was just becoming an enterprise architect, so we're back in 1999, I was working in a big pharmaceutical company, and we were trying to work out how to do enterprise architecture. And I got a small team of people, and we brought in a guy called Brian Burke, who at the time worked for Meta Group. Brian now is part of the Gartner team for enterprise architecture, so he's been doing it for years. And at this point, he was 5 or 6 years into doing the work. And Brian told us this little story about what does enterprise architecture mean to a business. And this little picture here helps remind me about what that story was like. He's walking down a corridor and meets the senior executive of the company that he's been working with. This is a big oil and gas organization in the late 90s. And with Brian and a few other people, they've just implemented a $15 million program for IT. What have they got out of it? Well, as they're walking down the corridor, they walk past the room where most of the equipment had been installed for this $15 million. Big black boxes full of little flashing LEDs. And at the time, most of them were red LEDs. They didn't have those nice cool blue ones that we have these days. So wall after wall of servers sitting there. And this chief exec says to Brian, okay, so what the heck is this? What have I got for my money? And Brian says to him, well, these boxes are running the latest version of the platforms that help you understand where your oil reserves are. And from the data that we have in here compared to what you had last year, we're able to increase the accuracy of what's actually known about the insides of your wells, where to place the drills, and what your capacity looks like. That is directly changing the way in which your organization works for managing that well capacity and the information you give to the market, which is hitting key objectives for you and your senior team about increasing the share price, because the knowledge of what you've got in the ground directly affects the valuation for this organization. And fundamentally, that's hitting your remuneration. Brian went from one end to the other, techie stuff to what matters to the chief exec, and as I just did there, 2 minutes. That's the whole core of this technique, in essence. That story stuck with me, and I want that one to stick with you as well, for just how effective knowing that thread can be in your executive communications. So I work for Microsoft in part of Microsoft Services. How many of you here are aware that Microsoft has enterprise architects in their services business that work for customers? Good. How many of you know that we've got nearly 400 of them around the world? No, I can see from a few surprised faces. That's changed over the last couple of years. A few years ago, we had about 30, and I spend most of my time recruiting enterprise architects for our teams around the world, making sure that they know how to do this sort of work effectively. And then I review the work they're doing, and I go in as coach and troubleshooter into our engagements. And I look after about 32 countries in Europe, Middle East, and Africa, for the most part, where we have nearly 160 enterprise architects working across organizations that are typically our top 2,000 or so. And in the last couple of months, we've just set up a center of excellence internally, where myself and soon to be another 6 colleagues will form the core of a team whose main job it is to keep pushing that quality level up in our organization and increase the number of enterprise architects so we can hit the top couple of thousand customers over the next few years. The things we do or about that sort of story I just talked about, Brian, and they start with, why? Why does anybody care about the changes that we are proposing? And this is a core model that I'm going to explain to you that we use with our enterprise architects. It's not TOGAF or anything like that. It's a model to help understanding. So I'm going to give you this on a blue screen to start with, very high level view, and then drill into how we actually do it. So, why? Why has a number of parts that we want to think about? What are the drivers? Drivers are things outside your control that are being done to you that you have to respond to. The economic collapse is one of them. In Microsoft a few years ago, Steve Ballmer saying we're all in the cloud. That was a driver. We didn't have a choice. You say, yes, Steve, and you get on with it. That is an organizational driver. Yes, Steve, and we get on with it until the name changes. But after drivers come objectives. That's what management say they want to do in response to the driver. Usually it's a little fluffy. Yeah, it's something that's got a little bit of wriggle room around it, but it's a key statement of intent. And then we have benefits. How are you going to measure that objective has been achieved? Could be financial terms, could be many other terms in there. So we have all these different reasons why you want to make change happen. And then, what change are we talking about? You could describe that in terms of processes and business processes. One of the issues there, though, is that as processes change, any models you've made are now out of date. So we try to look for things that perhaps are a little more stable than process. Sometimes that's organization structure, but our research indicated that org structures have a half-life of about 9 months. In my last 5 years in Microsoft, I've had 9 managers. So I know organizations change. What doesn't change very much is this abstraction we call a business capability. So we use that quite heavily internally. And then with capabilities, you have instances of them that are the business processes that are implemented around the place. So we want to understand what needs to change and also where it needs to change in the organization. It may be that all the change has to happen in New Zealand and absolutely nothing in Australia. Or perhaps New Zealand's got it all right and the Aussies have got to fix everything. Or perhaps, this is more often the case, it's the Americans that have got to change a heck of a lot of it. Sorry?
Oracle.
Yeah, well, we don't even touch them on the charts, to be honest. They don't exist on a lot of this. They don't, it's not a capability. The next part is how. So if you know why you want change to happen, you know what you want to change, the next thing is how you're going to make that change happen. And the first layer here is the business project, the business activity that's got to go on. And the next layer is then the technology change that you want to put in place. Because fundamentally, and let's all make sure we agree on this, technology change for its own purpose is absolutely useless. You change technology to have an impact on people, processes, your customers. But the technology itself, in terms of its change, is fairly meaningless without this in the middle. So we take all of that, but change happens when people change. Even with automation, you've still got to have the people change because they're being automated. So in all of these, there's a who that we have to understand. And a key activity for us is that stakeholder management, as it would be for yourselves and your organizations. So here, every single one of these has a person involved. The drivers, there are people involved in those. The objectives, a person set them. The benefits, somebody will own them. Somebody may have to claim credit for the project being successful or deny that they were ever involved when it fails. In the processes, there is somebody who owns the business process. There may well be somebody here who has to run the project. The key thing to remember is, it's very rarely the same person that goes all the way across a model like this. So we look at this as the starting point to build that stakeholder picture. Let's push that to one side now, because all of this is a great static model. What you've got to do is make it a little more dynamic and put time on there. Change doesn't all happen like that. It takes time. So you would take these projects, the business and technology ones, and we pull them out on a timeline and start to understand then the dependencies between those projects. And a key thing that we have focused on in enterprise architecture is the value side. our framework that we use internally brings together enterprise architecture techniques along with program management, portfolio approaches, all sorts of governance activities, and adoption as well. How do you ensure adoption of what's being deployed and the value being realized? And that framework we call the value realization framework because it pulls together all these different parts. When you've got a model like this, the why is where you've identified the value you're going to get out of your programs. The what and the where tells you the costs. And this gives us a value realization plan that we can use in an organization that aligns with the technology and the project plans that you want to deliver. So that's that core structure. That's the theory. What does it look like in practice? Usually something you want to print out and not put on a whiteboard, not put on a projector like this. Because there's detail in here. But it's detail that fits on a page. What you've actually got here, this is a benefits dependency network. And this is a business case on a page. So you're all going to get the presentation deck afterwards and you can read through the details at your leisure. What I want to admit here, and be very clear on where it's come from, we didn't invent this. This isn't some Microsoft IP that we're claiming, wow, we did all of this. This was created at Cranfield University Business School back in the mid-1990s by a bunch of really smart guys. And they taught the enterprise architects in the UK in the late 1990s in Microsoft how to do this. And we have then pushed that out around the world as part of our practice because we know it works well. And very happy to say we've got a great relationship with Cranfield and always happy to say where this came from as well, because from our perspective usage, you want to give credit where credit's due. These guys really did understand how to simplify what is a complicated conversation sometimes. But what I want to do with the rest of this talk is actually take you through an example. Because showing you the why, the what, and the how, and linking it together in that top-level view on one of these doesn't give you any real understanding, I know, for how to do it or what you get out of it. So for the next 35, 40 minutes, I'm going to give you a real example. This is an example that came out from a hospital, healthcare organization, hopefully something that you all have some understanding about when we talk about the terms, but I hope none of you are actually currently going through situations with a hospital, unless you're helping them with their IT projects, that is. So here, what have we got? Big hospital environment. Few key things that they're trying to drive for. At a board level, the board wants to focus on the cost for care. They want to ensure that they are effective and efficient in the way in which they deliver healthcare to the patients for the whole catchment area they look after. They want to make sure that they are able to achieve the targets they have. I don't know what your healthcare system is like here. In the UK, it's very target-based. If a hospital is not achieving its targets, there are problems, and the board has to deal with those if they want to ensure they're continuing to get the right level of funding. There's also increasing demand for healthcare programs. Most of the world today is suffering from what's known as an obesity epidemic that brings with it diabetes and other diseases on the back of that. So we may have managed to stop a heck of a lot of people smoking over the last couple of generations, but we haven't stopped them eating. And certainly eating the wrong things. So there is more and more demand for all the range of healthcare programs. And there's government policy. The politicians have decided to step in and tell the doctors how they should be treating patients and what they expect of patient care. This is forcing change. These are drivers. Yeah? We all happy with that? Understand that one? Good. I'm getting nods of heads. Come on. Give me more interaction. I know it's just after lunch. The calories are kicking in now. That's it. A little nod of the head will help keep the energy flow going. The brain's not switching off. So we've got a project team. This project team have been tasked with working through a whole series of IT initiatives and trying to ensure they can communicate those initiatives effectively in the organization. And what I don't want to do is start with the IT projects here because that often limits the thinking in an organization. So we're going to start with the reasons why and work our way across. When I finish this, what I want you to understand is you can actually start anywhere. in a benefits dependency network work outwards from any point in it with what your starting information is that you've got. But learning it, it's easiest to start from the reasons why. So here we've got this team. And this particular team are starting out with trying to understand how best to get people to do this activity. One way to do it is a workshop. And in reality, a workshop is one of the best ways to get started. Because you can get a lot of the stakeholders together, you can capture information from them, you can facilitate a discussion between the people in the room, bring a lot of this together. Workshops are not the only answer, though. And in fact, you will rarely finish one of these benefits dependency networks in a workshop. Because what you're going to find is you haven't got the right people in the room when you start to work out all the details. So you could go out and do individual interviews. And that is also a part of the technique you might use here. Find a few of the key stakeholders and just take them one-on-one. Find out what they individually care about and build that into the overall model. But the reality often looks something more like this. Few interviews to start with the top-level stakeholders. Get them to give you the drivers that set the scope for where you're going. When you've done those top-level interviews, get a workshop that only does half of it. So that in the workshop, you understand why you want to change, you've understood the objectives, the benefits, and what to change in the business. And then stop. Because think about it. The people you need in the room to do that part of the work are from the business side. Yeah? That's who you're facilitating the conversation with. If your deep techie turns up to tell you what the business needs to do in terms of its change, you've probably got the wrong person sitting in the room trying to explain the business change. And certainly it won't be in the right language and terms that we want to talk about here. So the workshop for why and what typically has the people who are going to go through the change, those that will own the benefits, those that will have to drive them. Then some follow-up interviews, because what's happened in that workshop is a lot of assumptions have been made. People have sat there and said, yeah, definitely, this is the target we want to go for, and this is how we'll measure it, and Bob should be able to do that quite happily with his team. Bob wasn't in the room, and Bob doesn't know what his team's going to have to do at this point. So the interviews then take you out and work with the other stakeholders. And then you do a workshop for the how. Now you bring a few of the key business people back into the room, but this time around, you've got enterprise architects, solution architects, people who have seen solutions in other places, who can actually start thinking about how to make the change. And not just the technical side here, you might have some business architects who are really thinking about what processes are we going to have to change to make this work? How are we going to land the change management in the organization? Because when we talk about change, even technology change, you've also got to think how to retrain people in the IT department. If one of your big changes here is let's go from on-premise to cloud, you're changing a fantastic number of things. From how people support the organization, from the service level agreements that people are working with, you're probably going to be changing your staffing ratio that you've got internally and what those staff are doing. So there's a lot of change to be planned in here from many different people. So it's usually a whole sequence of activities with iteration that goes through building a model like this. So let's start and say, building a BDN, I'd often have a big whiteboard. We've done the interview, and we've brought in those drivers that we had on the slide a few minutes ago. That's what we've got written up here. Hospital board focused on care, funding based on achieving patient care targets, and perhaps a little bit more description behind some of those. Now, when we finish all of this work, it's not just the one sheet that we've got. You've actually got a pretty big body of evidence that goes with it. So there's very often a report that might get produced that drills into the details. But a key part of doing this sort of modeling is to get the language simplified to the point that on one page, you can start to see how the pieces fit together. Because that top driver up there, you're passionate about. That's driving what you want to change in the organization. The second driver on here is what you're passionate about. That's driving your change in the organization. You two guys have got totally different programs of work you want to do, and you've been beating each other up for the last couple of months about who should have the budget to get the work done. And we see that a lot of times when we're doing these workshops. But by putting this on the wall and showing the interconnectivity that goes all the way through from what's driving you and your behaviors and how you're being measured and what's changed and the platforms for it, we actually enable you to start having a rational conversation. I did this back in 2000. in a big pharmaceutical company in the UK. I was the enterprise architect there. And we had the biologists and the chemists and some informaticians sitting in the middle. And they wanted a new way of doing drug discovery that integrated the data sets from biology and chemistry. 3,500 different data sources in total that they had. And we were trying to get them to work together because we needed both to support the funding request. Over a 2-year period, we were about to double the research IT budget for the amount of software we were going to put in place here and really give them systems that could have spreadsheets that were chemically aware and all sorts of great ideas like electronic lab books. And to be honest, they couldn't even agree which way the taps should turn in their buildings. Yeah? If you went into the chemistry building, the taps went one way. If you went to the biology building, the taps went the other way. If they can't agree what color to paint their walls, what carpet flooring to put down, and which way the taps could turn, how the heck were we ever going to get them to agree on a major change program worth tens of millions of pounds? And in fact, when we got them in the room in the first place, they came in, big long room, big table down the middle, and the biologists lined up on one side in level of seniority, and the chemists lined up on the other side in level of seniority. And the IT guy sat at the end, and we thought, oh, hell, this is going to be tough. So we used this model. We broke them up. We had the next team meeting where we put them all on little round tables instead, with no more than 4 seats to a table. And we actively told them to sit with peers. So the managers sat together, the guys that sat in the labs sat together, and then we went through with them what was driving the changes in the organization and got them starting to talk and put it in. Very interactive, writing all little sticky notes, sticking it on the wall, and then iterating through over a number of hours to get the wording right and prioritize these so that we'd really understood them. And we got people like this guy, who here is our director of operations. And yes, they did wear shirts like this as well. This is my modern day example. This isn't the pharmaceutical company. This is the hospital we're back in. But you'll notice everybody here has Windows 8. This is an extremely up-to-date organization. So you have people like this who were sitting at the top tables. And here, these are his objectives. Based on the drivers, this is what he has said he wants to be pushing in the organization. That he wants to be able to demonstrate value for money. Great phrase. I get this a lot of time when I'm talking to senior execs. I want to be able to demonstrate value for money. So I ask them, how do you define value? Mutter. Yes, big things. Financials. Return on investment. So typically, the definition of value is a little weak. How do you demonstrate that in terms of a value for money? Often they'll just talk ROI. Well, you don't get ROI for hospitals as a key driving factor for a lot of their projects. You know, it's not return on investment. It's number of patients that have had a satisfactory care program that actually get out alive without any secondary infections. Those are key things that they're tasked on. So here, we need to start drilling into these and understand, what do you mean by that high-level phrase? So if that's our objective, we record those on here, and we record who said them, and we're going to come back to those in a minute and work out the benefits. And that's where we'll get the detail. But there's other people you might bring in. So the guy we've just had is up at the top. He wants to drive the business. The next level in terms of our change is a clinical director. He really does care about the patient side. So what his objectives are for his teams and his people are to get the right care at the right place at the right time, whether it's in the emergency room through to the aftercare. He wants to make sure the resources are balanced in the organization and they've got the right information to be able to make that care happen. Using evidence for treatment profiles. Now, I said earlier, this does come from a real example. I was surprised when I heard this. I said, what do you mean? You've not been using evidence in the past? And I said, well, no, actually. We know how to treat a disease, but what we don't know is how long it takes from the point the patient arrives in the hospital and we start the treatment program until we can effectively move them off the high priority ward areas into the lower priority ward areas. We don't actually know how many of them have to get moved back afterwards, what the real duration of care programs look like. the sort of stuff that today we talk about as big data. And this is what was really coming out of this. Evidence they want to capture from all the way through their process. So you see, what we're doing here is ask them for their top-level statements and then almost clarify it word by word in discussion to get down to why. Why do you really want to do this and what do you mean by it? And this last one's really interesting, promote patient independence. How are you going to measure personalization of care as to whether it also is effective in terms of the right sort of care? I mean, well, go on the internet, as I know many people do these days, when you've got symptoms and you try and work out what you've got. And then you find the articles that tell you, yes, you're anything from you're going to die next week through to don't worry about it, it's just a sniffle. And this is what to do about it, from homeopathic remedies through to vitamins, exercise programs, and must see your doctor now. So the patients are far more educated than ever before. And what they want to look at in the hospital is how to help patients understand the information they're getting from other sources and use it. Great. So we capture all of that. And now we start to connect it together. This is one of the key things about the benefits dependency network, the connectivity. But let me tell you, it's going to get messy before it starts to clean up. There's going to be a lot of arrows on here bringing these things together. And for your benefit, I've already done a little shuffling up and down to make this look nicer. But when you first get these on a whiteboard, there's arrows all over the place. That's okay. It's in the tidying up and the iteration. You start to ask yourself the question, just how significant is this connection? Is it making a major difference or is it just an also-ran in terms of our thinking here? And you know what? They're judgment calls some of the times. There's no hard and fast formula that tells you definitely this is connected. You have to be able to have a logical argument that goes behind why the connection is there. But now we take this project team, we've got these drivers and objectives, and if you start to think, the benefits, why are you doing that benefit column? And what are you doing with it? Well, first thing you might be doing is thinking about a business case. So from one perspective, you really want to get through it to find out you've got enough money to be able to say, this project is worth doing. Okay? How many of you have been involved in business case development? Stick your hands up. Should be a lot of hands here, I'm hoping. Good. How many of you believe that business case you wrote would to be accurate? It's a much smaller number, it always is. I mean, some are very good out there, and I would hope we can get more and more to be accurate. How many of you measured after the project was delivered that that benefit was realized in your organization? Brilliant. Now, for the rest of you, consider what's going to happen when your project managers are told you're not allowed off the project until you've delivered the benefits you put in your business case. I've told that to a few CIOs over the last few years, and usually the project team want to take me out, not to have a drink afterwards, but find the local canal and put me in it. But think what that changes. If you've got to consider you're not going to finish the project until you've actually realized the benefits you say, you're actually going to be a lot stricter with yourself and everybody else as those benefits are going to be real. They're going to be tangible. I've got a question here at the back. Let me take Okay, I'm going to repeat that for the mic so people get it on the recording. The experience had been that in the time the program had been implemented, in the year and a half, the business had changed so much, you couldn't actually measure the benefits and see that they'd been realized. Well, that's actually a core part of having the right sort of measures in the benefit work as well, that you build them into KPIs and other things that are more stable in your organization, that you actually think right at the start, what am I able to measure? So after the business case, the next thing to think about is, who cares? There's no point measuring everything. Who's really going to care to support this business case? And it's the measures that they care about that certainly will be very important into that business case itself. There may be many others, but unless you know who cares, you could well put together a business case with things that just don't matter. So Cranfield spent a lot of time looking at the different sorts of benefits, and they thought about it in these four categories. And I'm going to start at the bottom with actually one that's just off the bottom of the screen. The lowest level benefit you can get for a project. Belief. I believe this is going to be good for us. That's the lowest level. And let's immediately discount that. Belief is not appropriate for a business case. Okay? So, what's better than belief? Sorry, it should have been off the top of the chart, not the bottom here. What's better than belief? It's observable. I can see a difference. And I've had one project over the years where we actually had one of the first benefits to be realized as observable. The employees are coming in on time and are coming in with a smile on their face. They're less miserable. Yes. You know, this was a change program for an organization that had got a pretty miserable culture. In the public sector, where they'd gone through wave after wave of policy-driven change, and basically the life force had been sucked out of the employees. About all they were waiting for was early retirement. And even that was even the guys at 21, you know? So the change program that had gone in there to start out said, it's going to take us 6 to 12 months to be able to measure a difference because of what we put in place. And that measurement may well be about better staff retention. Yeah? It may be, you know, that you can actually start to see that in a 12-month time frame. But what can you see in 6 weeks? That people come in with a new sense of hope, with a new sense that the work they're doing is purposeful. Yeah? And that you could do by survey, perhaps, by asking questions. But certainly what they did was put a recent graduate on the front gate who counted the number of smiles. Yeah? And if people smiled at him on the way in the morning, tick. And they started it before the change program started running, and they kept it going for 6 months. And they had the smileometer. It was a male, so it did not have that other aspect that you're thinking of. The next level down after observable, measurable. Yeah? I can measure it. Now, with measurable, there is something you can measure. It could be number of boxes we have shipped out the door today. It could be number of customer orders coming in. It could be number of faults on servers that get reported. But the difference between measurable and quantifiable is that with measurable, I've got no history. I don't know where we were at all yesterday. So I have no trend. I have no background to go on with this. I have no idea if we did nothing where it was going. We just have an initial data point. And I can set a target for the future and measure, are we achieving that target? Quantifiable, I've got data. I've got a trend line. I know where that trend is going. So now if my business case says we're going to get a 10% reduction in costs for a particular product because of the work we're doing, I can look at it and say, and the trend line was going to be a 10% increase. So this project is actually going to do 20% better than we would have been, the state we would have been in a year's time. So quantifiable can often help you get a much more realistic view. And after that, sometimes people will put numbers against these things you're measuring. They will be able to say, if you can talk 10% off our product costs, that will save X million pounds. Sometimes those financial numbers don't make sense to have. How many of you have ever had a business case that says we'll save 14 minutes off the boot up time of a PC by moving from one platform to another? How many of you are on a Windows XP one right now that after all the things you've added to it over the years takes 35 minutes to start up? Yeah, I've got government departments like that in the UK because of all the security checks that go in. Before you can do anything on the machine, it's got to validate that everything it's running is secure and hasn't changed since the last time you rebooted, which could have been 10 minutes ago. It really doesn't matter. And then your business case could be, we'll take that down to 5 minutes. Is that a valid thing to put in a business case? Yes, it is on a time basis. That time is reusable. But what's not valid is to claim that as a cost saving to the organization, because where'd you get that saving from in cost?
That's another box down further down under financial, which is
bankable. Bankable, in that sense. Yes, could well be bankable, could be on there. But certainly what we look at is to keep it simple. When you've gone from quantifiable and you can actually put numbers to it, currency, then you've got to a financial level. But unless you can realize those numbers and take them out of a budget somewhere realistically, don't start trying to get clever with it. So we say half of what goes in a business case is non-financial. And that's actually good because it keeps you focused on the whole range of benefits that you want to try and achieve. So the team go away and they start talking to people now. And they start asking questions about what sort of benefits do you want to get. And here, you'll see, we're talking to a different audience. So we've moved on now from the senior managers to the people who do the work, who run the local teams. In this case, a guy in finance and admin. He's got a strange look on his face. I thought, I love the picture when I saw that. I thought, okay, he's got to go in here. But he just looks like an accountant to me, something like he knows something about the payroll that you don't know. But he's got clear things, clear statements he can make about the benefits they want to achieve. And it usually starts out as something like this, which may well be in the quantifiable type range. But what we work on for all of these is focus on what's the starting point now for that particular number? What is the target number? What is the time frame within that target that it must be achieved? Three key things, two dates, and the change between the measurements. We start to put those in here now. And you see, as it's written up, reduce average time for insurance claims from 80 days to 60 days by June. And then you keep talking. You keep bringing in the other stakeholders. And you work from those high-level objectives to start talking with them and say, where are your benefits going to come from in the organization? And you know it's iterative. You don't just fill a column in. You might go backwards and forwards over here and back over there with some of these. But then we get to the business change. Because here, we'll talk to a patient manager about what you're going to change in your business to achieve that benefit. I'm going to go back one. So that would come out of here somewhere. Accurate data for patient measurements. So we've got a first pass of this statement around the benefits. And then we go and see somebody who will actually be doing the work that's got to achieve that benefit. And we'll talk to them about the process, about the capability that they have in their organization and what's got to change within that capability to get the benefit. Because there's a fundamental principle here. If you do the same stuff today that you did yesterday, you'll get the same result. And a definition of madness is to expect change if you keep doing the same things and you're not going to get something different on the other end. But many organizations think they can keep all their businesses working the same way and just throw some technology in and it'll change. Doesn't work. So we look here, what do we want to change for the business? So our patient manager has some clear ideas about what they want to change. The nurse with patient data capture, and here specific devices that we might want to have to work with and how to integrate the data from those devices. So it's not just processes that might be changing. It could be technology that's deployed within those processes that we have to consider how to change that to make it effective. And then from the administration side, we're back to this guy. What do you have to change behind the scenes to make some of this work? Yeah, so there's frontline changes that are realizing the benefit, but most of these financial changes are not going to be provable unless this guy actually implements the reports, puts the tracking in place in his systems that are going to help you be able to understand the change in the business. So the one I got from the point at the back, when business changes, everything can change with it, so you don't actually have that ability to measure. But if you get to the guys that do the measurements, that run the numbers and bring them into the program, then you can start to incorporate those into the change program as well. So now we've got three big business changes that we want to look at. And typically what we do here is a little bit of shuffling around to try and work out are there projects or programs within this overall picture of things that are working together. And in this particular sense, we had the three key stakeholders that we've just gone through on those pictures. And with each one of those, there's a whole series of things that they're going to have to change in their business to realize these benefits. Then we get the IT guy in. Now, these have been sat in the back of the room for most of this with deliberate instructions to sit down and shut up. Yeah? Don't influence the business conversation. Sit there with a knowledgeable pose, with your fingers raised, contemplating what's happening. Soak it in. Listen to the business, because your time is going to come. Your time is going to come when you're going to have a serious thing to think about. What change are you going to have to do? Not to your technology, not to the stuff you're doing to the business, but to the changes you're going to have to make in your own IT organization, in the way you deploy your technology. What are your project managers going to have to do with their teams? All of those sort of things. So we bring in the IT director, and we ask him, and he gives us the IT changes. And to make all of this work, what we've identified is the IT organization has to do this daily provision of systems. Because they've got lots of mobile devices going into the hospital. Don't worry, I know you're squinting to try and read it. I'll read the important bits and you can look at the rest of it later when you get the deck. The daily provision and support of mobile devices and data. Key change in the way IT works. You don't get a move and change request on a Monday and get round to it on a Friday afternoon for a device wanted in a ward that's looking after a patient. You get a call to say the box has gone down and a guy picks another box up, walks down the ward, plugs it in, takes the other one away. That sort of service level is necessary when lives are at risk. So, all of that's in place, and now we start talking about those programs. What do we do in IT when we've got stuff like that? We find cool names for them. I've avoided calling them after Star Trek starships or anything like that, which I've seen all over the place. Or, as I saw one last week, this might amuse you, given the audience here, droids from Star Wars. Yeah, you really had to be on the geek side of geek to appreciate the difference between R2-D2 and R3-D4. I don't know, but that's how they'd identified their programs of work, because you understood that one was a utility robot and one was a control-type robot or something like that. Okay, I'm not following this myself, but obviously it meant something to you. What we do is try and keep it in the terms that the people in the business understand. Because the model we're working with here, a benefits dependency network, is about communication and clarification. All the way through, you're using terms that make sense to the business that we're talking with. So we have the one patient program, the on target program, and the electronic patient record as the things that are changing here. Now, did we know we were likely to do these projects when we started? Yes. Because no matter where you are, in an organization, as soon as somebody says, I've got problem X, somebody on the IT side is starting to think, I know how to solve that. Yeah? Even if you're the best enterprise architect in the world, it's going to crop up in the back of their mind before you swat it down and say, no, think about why first, think about why. But your head's going to be going, yeah, I know how to fix that. Yeah, a few forms, put this in place. Got it. So straight away, you know, that even on the business side, they've already started thinking what programs of work they need. What we've been doing in everything to get to this point is to validate the thinking, to get rid of all those stupid assumptions, to clarify why different people want different things that we're trying to bring together. And now we can say, yes, these are the programs of work we're expecting. But very often, they're slightly different to what we would have started with if we just said, what do you want? Okay? And here, we can identify within one patient, there's a whole series of things about consolidating the patient care view, centralizing the patient information repository. Bring the data together, because that's what the nurse needs. And you see here, the on-target program is actually overlapping between a couple of stakeholders, and the one patient overlaps between stakeholders. So in the linkage we're thinking about, it's not one major stakeholder or stakeholder group to one program of work. You're starting to understand the dependencies and the interrelationships. And I want to make sure I've given you the big visual before you get this. That text is exactly the same text as on the previous slide. Okay? That's how you put it on the BDN chart, and you start to put the linkage in to say, how do those projects fit? But there's some really interesting things on here about the way in which the connectivity goes. If I see a BDN, and I've got a box connected to a box, connected to a box, and there's none of these other lines connecting to any others, I've got a really tight dependency. If the guy over here that wants the project, it disappears, and there's no longer a business objective to it, everything all the way along down the line should die. Doesn't happen in a lot of organizations. Once projects get started, there's an inertia. The people want to finish it. So we actually use BDNs like this to maintain a live view of the portfolio, to constantly check, are we doing the right thing? Have the priorities changed at one end? I've got a big oil and gas organization that one of my guys is working with in the Middle East, where we spent 5 weeks taking their whole existing portfolio of IT projects, mapping it to the change in the business to produce one of these, and they've got this huge poster that at every monthly governance meeting, the sheikh who runs the IT organization pulls it out, and they revalidate their BDN to prove that they're still doing the right things. And if any new projects want to go in, they have to add the drivers, the benefits, the key things that are going through for their organization at the highest level, and use that to manage their portfolio. And he's harsh with them. if anybody ever moves off over here on the sponsoring side with the benefit, he challenges the organization to prove it's worth continuing that project or kill it. Gone. The project, not the people involved. Excuse me for the typical picture of a geek. But obviously he's running Windows 8. He's got multiple platforms sitting in front of him. So we now go and find the technologists, the people who understand what is going to be necessary to make the technology change to support these business programs. Yeah? We want to understand the devices necessary because, as you saw in the BDN, this is a program of work that requires new devices to be deployed in a mobile sense. The solutions and the services that have got to be connected together and the platforms to put in place. The last thing you want to do is ask the business person what to put in here, although many of them will tell you in the last time they were on a plane, they saw an article about such and such a technology stack which will really solve their problems. Yeah? So here we do bring the technologists in, and we ask them, tell us what it is you're going to have to change to make this work. And that goes down here. Now, this is a BDN suitable for communication to the business side to understand what's going on and the senior leadership in IT. If this was at the project level for the IT guys, this left-hand side gets a lot messier because we don't do this clustering around the technology. You actually put all the linkage sitting in here to show which technologies are being used for which parts of each program. For the purposes of this, I'd have had to blow this out a lot larger to show all of that. And typically what we do there, change the BDN to just have that project in it and get rid of everything else that's not connected to this one for another version of the chart that goes down another level, and then you can see all the parts that are in it. Do those individual ones and then roll it back up to see what the aggregation looks like. And that actually helps you also understand how strong the connectivity is down here. If you remember back on my chart at the start, the why, the what, and the how, we throw this out in a timeline now. So all of this here, we start asking, what sequence do you need to change it in? When do you have to start the projects for the right sort of cascade effect? What technologies to implement first and when to change them in the organization? And that's a BDN. You get it done the first time and it'll look messy. What are you going to remember with a BDN? Three things. Iterate. Keep iterating. Keep bringing the stakeholders in. It doesn't matter if it looks messy, so long as it's possible to be used to communicate with stakeholders to get their input, to get their thinking. And then you tidy it up. Review. Constantly review what assumptions have been made and the connectivity that's on there. And for some of our big ones, big programs of change like this, I might have behind the scenes nearly 40 BDNs. I've got the one big one that's holding the whole top level, and then individual ones for each part of the business change. So pivot it down the middle. Take every business change and just say, for this one, what's the connectivity all around? And I can go to the person that owns that part of the business and really start to understand it. So you drill down and then drill down again to look at the projects and the details within them and then aggregate that back up. And challenge. If any of you were looking at that last BDN, this one, did you notice what's wrong with it? Why we should challenge it? I'll give you a clue. When you haven't got connectivity, there's a problem. So, there's a problem. These benefits are not being achieved. There is no business change from everything they've talked about that will achieve those benefits. Now we have a choice. We have to add some additional change into the organization, so there's somebody we don't know about who has to take responsibility for these. Or we go back up here and we say, do you really want to do that? Because when we talk to all the people in the business, there's nobody wants to work on this problem. There's nobody thinks it's important. And you can actually then get the right sort of conversation going on across here to make sure these things fit. So I'm starting to wrap up now for you. So I'm going to give you a few minutes for questions at the end. Either that or you can sneak out before the other rooms have finished and grab the coffee without being at the end of the 2,000 person queue. But to quickly give you this, always start with why. Start from that side of the board if you're walking into an unknown situation. Helps reduce your assumptions straight away. if the change program's already underway, if there's lots of business change already going on in the organization, start in the middle and work out why people are doing those projects and what technologies have already been put in place. And to be honest, I've only ever been involved in one total greenfield organization. It's for the Aga Khan, who wanted to build some academies in Africa. And I said, where are we now then, when they asked us to get involved? And they said, we bought some fields. And in 4 years from now, there are going to be buildings on them with 2,000 teachers and 20,000 students and an infrastructure in the cloud and all sorts of other cool stuff, we think. But right now, we've got some fields. That's a tricky problem, actually. Where do you start building an IT infrastructure when that's all you've got and you're going to build something that size? But that is rare. Once, I'm guessing, in my whole career, I'll get that. So normally, there is something that you've got sitting in here that you could start from to build out as your first example of how to do BDN. The other one is review the IT portfolio. Your new CIO comes in, he looks at how many projects you've got underway, and he goes, that's too many. Rationalize it. Well, what you could do then is just make a list of them all, work out which ones look stupid ideas, which ones you don't think will ever work, delete those, see what you got left, draw a line and say, right, job done. And then somebody will scream, you can't do that to my project, and you'll keep going around a loop for the next 6 months as everybody that goes below the line screams and then comes back up above the line again. Or as we've done quite a number of times now, you can do a BDN. You can open up the business case for every one of those projects and go backwards from everything you're doing in IT and say, this is the one view, the justification for IT and the benefit it's giving to the business. And we end up drawing pictures, that a heat map of the business showing where IT is having an impact and what's being delivered and how it's going to change their capabilities. So you can go in any direction when you know how to do this stuff. It is holistic. That's the nice bit about it. You start to bring everybody into the conversation about setting scope. So BDN is a scoping tool. It really helps you work out what should be in and what should be out. And when somebody comes along and says, I've had this great idea, why don't we add this feature into the project? When you've got a detailed BDN, you ask them, which benefit is that going to give us? How is that going to change what we've got in here? Which part of the business is going to change with it? And what I've seen over and over again is all those cool new features that won't really add stuff get killed when somebody has to try and justify the benefit that's going to be achieved at the end of it, especially when they have to put it in the context of everything else the program's doing. It helps you understand the relationships in the organization, because when you're doing the why and the what, you're really having to understand the people, the power relationships that they've got with each other and the negotiation that goes on to bring them together. As I said earlier, when I picked on these two gentlemen who could be in an organization together fighting it out over their own programs, this technique helps you understand what's going on. And finally, it's a mechanism for communication, not for projecting with PowerPoint, for printing out on a piece of paper and sitting down with somebody one-on-one, and you know what? Having a conversation. Actually talking about the change and what it means. I know it's a scary thought, isn't it, having a conversation? Well, you could get some of those really nice 27-inch Windows 8 tablets we've got sitting out there and laid on the table. That would work with a good resolution. You could still read that and bit of pinch and zoom and move around with it. Yeah. Or get those new big Surface devices we've got, the Surface 2, Pixel Sense, that's the sort of thing, isn't it? Yeah, something like this. Do this. Yeah? Cool. I often find, though, that 3 pence for a piece of paper is a heck of a lot better than 30,000 for the screen, but it depends on how much reuse we're going to get. But do a BDN, yeah, and we may well work it out. So there's related content. Later on this afternoon, the end session of the day, I'm going to talk about storytelling. Something else I'm passionate about, and you've heard me tell a few stories here, how to use storytelling and visual imagery to be able to improve your communication to your stakeholders. So you can catch me at that. I've also put some links online, so there's a quick link there for it to be able to follow through. But if you want to find out more about BDNs, just pop onto Bing and search for Benefits Dependency Network, and you'll find a lot of stuff has been put out there over the years by organizations, including the health service in the UK, with the BDNs they've created, and all the details of how they went about facilitating it. So, go press the appropriate buttons, give me your feedback. If this was useful for you, I'd like to thank you for your time. If this was not useful for you, go see Terry. It was all his fault. Thank you very much.